Good morning, Ottawa. This is The Goods with Dahlia Kurtz on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Hey, you. Hello. Happy Saturday. I'm going to introduce you to a guest who's going to tell you how the pandemic may permanently change how you work and connect with others. Theo Fleur is also going to be joining us. I wanted to get to this email that I get from my dad when I start the show, and I'm shocked. I am having a very hard time believing this. So my dad sends me an email, and it says that the state authorities in Wisconsin have not only made masks mandatory when you go to work, but have made masks mandatory for Zoom calls. For Zoom calls. Do you know what this means? My dad knows what Zoom is. I cannot believe for the life of me that my father actually knows what Zoom is. All right. I also asked you a question online before I introduced you to my guest. I had to get to some of your thoughts on this. I asked if minimum wage needs to be increased. And you could tweet me at Dahlia Kurtz during the conversation on Facebook. Jerry says wages are tied to marginal productivity and scarcity of skills. Maybe people should become more skilled and productive. Good point, Jerry. I'll tell that to my neurosurgeon friend who has been on the show before, who can't practice neurosurgery here because he's from another country, and instead he's delivering pizza. Jeff says, absolutely not. Most businesses couldn't afford this when Ontario cranked it up 20%, let alone now. It's ridiculous. Actually, Jeff, study after study, which I've read, and these studies aren't just from the Dahlia Research Institute of Dahlia Research. These are real studies that have been done. There has never been any proof or correlation that increasing minimum wage for employees has created more problems for businesses. In fact, conversely, it has been found that spending went up in the economy and at these very businesses that had to pay their employees more. And Emmett says, why does everyone think a minimum wage worker should be living on their own? I rented a room for $500 a month, dealt with roommates, and then started to work more than one job. Hustle is what is needed. And the only people who get paid more than at $15 an hour is the feds, because you get into the next tax bracket. Well, Emmett, hustle is great. And I think that people really do, many people for the most part, do need to work harder. But also tell this to single parents. Tell this to single parents. Tell this to a single mom or a single dad who's making $20 an hour and can barely afford to take care of themselves, let alone their kids as well. Continue to weigh in on that question. But let's get to this right now, because there's a study that's been taking place right here in Ottawa. It's called the Social Tech and Physical Distance Study, and results are in from the first part of it. How the pandemic may permanently change how you work and connect with other people. So joining me now, we have an associate professor of psychology and clinical psychologist at the University of Ottawa from the Individual and Social Influences of Technology Lab, Christelle Shaughnessy. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning, Dahlia.
So when last we spoke, you talked about this study. So let's just reframe where we were going with this. And I want to find out where we're at right now when it comes to your preliminary data.
Sure. So the Time One study we collected at the end of May and through all of the month of June. And we were asking people to reflect back on the period of time during which physical distancing was in place. So you may recall that in May and June, a number of jurisdictions started to lift their distancing measures, including in Ontario. We went into stage one, and I believe we even entered stage two near the end of our data collection. And what we were wondering was how much people were actually starting to use new technologies, or their sort of old technologies, but in some kind of new way, with different types of people in their lives. So we asked about family, we asked about friends, we asked about people in their workplace, and we asked about romantic and sexual partners. And we also asked about a whole bunch of variables or different types of ideas that past research and theories in technology use have suggested sort of prompt people or predict who's going to start new technology use. And we probably the more interesting stuff is we also asked what the outcomes of this use have been. So we asked about indicators of general mental wellness, but we also asked people just open-ended. Tell us what the best experience was, what's the worst experience, and what are your tips or suggestions or warnings for other people who are thinking about or might want to use new technologies with these types of people.
Christelle, the craziest thing about all of this is that my father knows what Zoom is now.
Yeah. I was listening to that part, Dahlia. I have a similar experience where my grandfather has purchased his first smartphone.
Wow.
And iPhone, and wants to FaceTime. And man, it's difficult to now explain that I'm an Android user and I don't have easy access to FaceTime.
Do you know what this is pointing to? And I noticed a lot of this at the, we'll get into more of your results in just a moment, but I noticed a lot of this, especially at the beginning of the pandemic when people were calling in to the goods because they had no way of communicating with the outside world. And we had some wonderful listeners who were buying iPads and phones and computers and different types of ways that we had somebody go in and give somebody internet access just so that people would be able to connect with the outside world. So these were people who were able to live with it for the most part for a long period of time, but it got to a point where they were so isolated that they had to call in to a talk show and ask for help so they can be connected. So this almost leads me to believe that your study could point to something far bigger, or even the study that came from the Dahlia Research Institute of Dahlia Research on the Goods. It shows that internet should be a basic right.
Yes. Yes. And I think I don't have the data in front of me about people's internet connection access or data access, but we do have questions about that, like what type of broadband, or do they have broadband rather? Where are they living? Do they have data plans? How big is their data plan? And also, how reliable is their connection? So there's also, I think, been, especially with the work from home and different types of situations where people have realized, oh, that high-speed access that I thought I had is maybe not so reliable, or it's maybe not as high as it needs to be when we are actually relying on things like video calls, video conference calls, and everyone in our neighborhood is. So I think there's, you know, it's undoubtedly the pandemic has moved us forward, and some scholars are saying like a jump forward by maybe 10 years in tech adoption in terms of the number of people who have picked up stuff and the different platforms that people have started to use, and a little bit the understanding people have that maybe they didn't have before around things like internet access and the importance of that, and the difference between being plugged into your modem or your router versus a Wi-Fi connection. And we have, I have heard some stories of, as you said, people getting others' internet access or neighbors who have their Wi-Fi locked down, opening up their Wi-Fi to other to neighbors who can't maybe afford to have Wi-Fi connections.
Dahlia, and we're having a conversation on the goods right now with Christelle Shaughnessy. She's the Associate Professor of Psychology, a clinical psychologist at the University of Ottawa. And we're talking about these preliminary results that have come from the social tech and physical distance study. And it's very interesting because, as Christelle's mentioned so far, this points to a jump in technology adoption by 10 years. This also points to the need for technology in our lives as a way to connect with other people, which really is a need to improve our mental health. So what are some of these key things that you have found when looking over your data so far?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things at time one, and I'll just mention we are collecting time two data now, so we'll get to see how things change over time and as people have adjusted to the new reality of the pandemic and also the changes in physical distancing. But we have found that people were adopting new technologies with each of the different types of relationships, so family, friends, workplace, romantic and sexual partners. One of the interesting things in our preliminary evaluation is that this new tech may not have a direct sort of benefit or detriment to our mental health. So when we're connecting with family, friends, and partners, it doesn't look like it's doing so much directly on our mental well-being. Now, that said, it may have a different type of role. It may be connecting us with social supports in a way that we wouldn't have access to, if particularly for people who don't have sort of people that they're living with. Now, where we are seeing a bit of an impact is on a lot of new technology in the workplace. So to connect with people at work does seem to have a small impact on our mental health in a negative way. So people who reported having to learn a lot of new technologies for work when they moved home and in that period up till May and June were showing poorer mental health. And that, I think, links to some great open-ended tips and tricks people provided. And the clear one to me is that a lot of people across all types of relationships said, pick one platform and stick to it. Right. So when we're thinking about a lot of new technology use in the workplace, for a lot of people, moving to work from home meant having to learn a lot of new ways of connecting to the people in their work. So you're talking about Zoom. Well, if you only had to learn Zoom, then that may feel a bit overwhelming at first, except then you learn it and then you know what you're doing. But if you have to learn Zoom and you have to learn, and I'm a bad culprit for this, I'm going to give you just a few other examples. Slack or a new, if your workplace rolled out new tools on, say, even your email or your Outlook, or you started using Windows or what's it called, Microsoft 365. I'm just throwing out some ideas here.
Well,
lots of platforms, right?
Yeah.
If you have to do it all at once, it feels like too much.
And any change in technology, I mean, Facebook changes its interface and all of a sudden everybody goes into anxiety attacks. Instagram changes its... Instagram changes any of its look. It changes its, I'm forgetting the word now, the image that you have on your phone. And all of a sudden, everybody just goes mad because we hate change. We adapt to it much better than I think we actually realize. But all of these changes, I can understand at the beginning how anxiety, not just because of the pandemic, but you have to deal with change and you have to make those changes. That gives people a lot of anxiety. So it'd be interesting to see how phase two of your study goes once people have morphed into understanding these sorts of things, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I think the other key finding that came out of this, or interesting finding, is that even though people were reporting that, they also were saying and suggesting that other people who haven't tried new technologies or something old in some kind of new way, so like the new Facebook piece app, for example, they are saying, like, lots of people are saying, like, just give it a try, because even though it might have these negative sides or it might be difficult to learn, it also was a way that allowed me to feel connected to other people. It prompted happiness. It helped me feel supported. Sometimes people reported like relief to be able to connect with other important people in their lives and know that those people were okay. And in the workplace in particular, people noted that it provided accountability for them to keep being working from home. Right. So if you had a way that you had to connect, and I think the points that they were making often were related to things like video calls, so not just emails. Because email is asynchronous. You can ignore it. You can reply to it.
I can't ignore it. Maybe you can, Christelle.
Right. No, I can't.
I wish I could.
It's hard to ignore it in certain...
You know, but
certainly some people could sort of delay their response, right?
I'd like to live that life. You bring up an interesting point, though, and I wonder about this, and I wonder, you know, how this would be studied, how you could understand this better. Earlier, when you were talking about how these conversations that people were able to continue having with their family didn't really impact their health, you know, either which way. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm still talking to my mom. But, you know, I think that's almost a very good point, because if you're still able to make, let's say, FaceTime calls with your parents and talk to your dad's ear like I can, he knows what Zoom is, but I'm still talking to his ear or his nostrils on FaceTime. But if you're able to do that, I don't look at that like a very big deal when I'm doing it. It's just like, here's just another conversation with my dad. Okay. Right. But if you were to take that ability away from somebody, then I'd like to see how they responded. If you did not allow them that technology to have communication with their loved ones who are not in their life right now, who are living in another city, then how would people respond to that? Because it's not a big deal now because I'm taking it for granted. But if you took that ability away from me, I'd be a pretty sad puppy.
Yes. I think you're bang on with that. And I think one of the things we forget about is whenever I'm doing my work with technology, I have to remind people that, like, actually a phone is a piece of communication technology. We've had that for so long.
I thought it was
long.
My camera. Now you're telling me this is a piece of communication technology? I'm so confused.
Yeah. But that's like one of the interesting things I always find. And I think about, like, are people remembering? And we had at least a couple of our participants who actually reminded us that actually a phone call is really nice. I prefer to just like have a phone call. And maybe that's an older generation who's just like, please stop trying to make me use Zoom. Or your dad. You'll have to ask your dad. So we know how to use Zoom now. Which one do you prefer? We Zoom call or we phone call and see?
Either way, I guarantee you'll just be talking to his nostrils or his ear. Last question for you, Christelle. And I know this doesn't necessarily work into your study, but I'm going to be posting this online for people to answer. There was an opinion poll done and it asked, where's 2020 in the course of your life? And it finds that half of Canadians think this is their worst year ever. 2020 has been their worst year ever. So how important, when you hear people say this has been their worst year ever, would you say that social media is a buffer to make it better than saying, let's say 90% of Canadians think it's their worst year?
Yeah.
How big a buffer is social media, would you say?
So I think the buffer depends on whether you focus on the positive parts of social media or the negative parts of social media and how much you spend on it, right? So I think when I looked at that study, they also pointed out that older people were more likely to say it's worse, or no, younger people rather. I always think, well, yes, because when you live longer, you have more opportunities for other types of relative experiences. And when we think about sort of our own illness, other people who are important to us getting ill or dying. And so technology, I will remind people, technology, even though they said to wear masks during Zoom call, you can't pick up germs via technology.
Tell that to the governor of Wisconsin.
It doesn't travel through our internet connection lines and come back out through the screen at us. So we can use technology when we're sick and we have to stay away from other people. We can still connect with them via technology.
If people want to become part of this study, the Time 2 study is on now. How can they connect?
Yes, great. So you can find us very quickly and easily via our own social media on Instagram.
Not
or
another
Twitter.
Social media.
Yeah.
Yes.
At UO Insight. Or the quick link to the study is https://, nobody remembers that part, but tiny, so tinyurl.com/, and it's the STPD study 2.
Yeah, Christelle, nobody is going to remember that. They're just going to have to, Google it.
Google STPD study 2.
Of all the people who will remember that tiny URL, I guarantee you the one person it will be my dad. For some odd reason. Christelle Shaughnessy, Associate Professor of Psychology and Clinical Psychologist at the University of Ottawa. You can become part of that social tech and physical distance study to find out how the pandemic may permanently change how you work and connect with others. But I want to know, and we're going to put this question up on 580 CFRA's Facebook page right now, is 2020 the worst year of your life? Because an opinion poll finds half of Canadians think this is their worst year ever. Is this really a question about the pandemic, or is it a question about your mental health? You can weigh in on that. Tweet me at Dahlia Kurtz. Join the conversation on 580 CFRA's Facebook page. Still ahead, Theo Fleury on pushing through depression, the pandemic, finding hope and healing, and how tattoo stands may be the new lemonade stands after an 8-year-old from our community has made his mark. We're going to get to all of that. Still ahead on The Goods, I'm Dahlia. This is 580 CFRA.